Well, hey, everyone. We are here for this week's culture segment, and we're going to talk to, you know, a lot of times the guys write into us and they're like, hey, this was for the ladies, but not really. We always want you guys to listen in. Well, we're flipping it this week. This is going to be a subject where we're talking primarily to the men, but ladies, we want you to listen too. And so it's always great when we can bring an expert into the room to kind of unpack some wisdom for us. And so today we have got Dave Willis here. Hey, Dave.
Hey, it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you,
Linda. Excellent to have you. So we're going to be talking about, first of all, you have a book that is titled Raising Boys Who Respect Girls. And not that we're talking to boys today. Hopefully, we're going to give some retrospective wisdom and stuff to these guys. Or hopefully, they're doing it awesomely and they'll just be like, yeah, but there's always something new to learn here. So we're going to be talking around themes from the book. But also, so you guys know, Dave is host of Marriage Today, a TV program, and he's a relationship coach, a speaker, author, blogger, and he and his wife Ashley do a lot collectively in the marriage sphere. So we appreciate you.
Thanks. Hey, thank you. I'm glad to be here.
It's really cool. So, okay, so let's start talking about this, because I think when people hear like the topic of respect, it's either going to be like, oh my goodness, now the guys are just going to get beat on again or whatever and made to feel like a bunch of jerks. But we don't want to do that
no,
today.
No, it's not that. I promise, guys. Don't turn it off.
Okay. So let's just kind of broad brush, paint the picture of if someone just walks up to you on the street and says, Dave, what does it mean for a Christian young adult guy, or really any guy, but let's just talk to our young adults here. What does it mean to actually respect women? What do you say to that? Because it just sounds like kind of a labyrinth of, you know, it could be problematic.
Well, instead of just giving maybe one kind of standard definition, I think most guys look at it in terms of the individual relationships in their life. Like, what does it look like for me to respect, you know, this young lady who's my friend? What does it look like for me to respect this, you know, lady who's my boss, or this lady who I'd like to ask out on a date? You know, in those very specific situations, you know, what does that look like? And I think that our culture has really been fed sort of like a lot of lies for a lot of years about what manhood is supposed to be, what womanhood is supposed to be for that matter, where people feel like they've got to fit into this rigid definition. Like, you know, if you're going to be a man, you know, you've got to have a beard down to the middle of your chest. And thankfully, there's more to manhood than that, because I can't grow a decent beard. I'm 41. I still haven't finished puberty, apparently. So there's more to it than just facial hair. But God gives us in His Word this beautiful, beautiful dynamic of masculinity and femininity, totally equal and yet beautifully distinct. And I think it's in those distinctions that we've gotten so confused. We think that to respect someone means to think, well, you're exactly like me, because we think being equal with someone means we must be exactly the same. But we're not the same. And that's beautiful. God made us beautifully distinct. And so to disregard those beautiful distinctions is actually a form of disrespect, because you're disregarding a big portion of that person's God-given nature and identity. So part of a man respecting women, and women respecting men for that matter, is acknowledging and understanding just the beautiful distinctions of what masculinity is meant to be, what femininity is meant to be, how they are both equal, and they're not meant to be in competition with one another, but they're meant to beautifully harmonize with one another in a way that brings balance and beauty to every single part of life. And then to kind of drill down and get even more specific, I think talking to an audience of young men about respecting women, there are a lot of different areas I could camp out on, but I think that for most of us, and you know, a lot of what's kind of on the minds of young guys is, how does this relate in terms of the way that I view the opposite sex in the area of sex itself? And our culture, again, is objectifying women and people in general through just all different kinds of broken messages about sex. And I think that as Christian young men who are following Jesus and wanting to be men of honor, the way that that's going to stand out more than any other way is in the area of our sexual integrity. And doing what, you know, the Apostle Paul wrote to his young protege Timothy in Scripture, saying, like, you know, don't let there be even a hint of sexual immorality. And I want you to treat the young women in your life with all the purity you would treat your own sister. Mm-hmm. And that right there is so countercultural, but we've got to be willing to live with that kind of respect and sexual integrity if we're really going to live a life of respect.
Okay. So I feel like, I mean, I think everyone can agree that we definitely hear messages from the culture about sexuality and men treating women and whatever. I mean, those of us who just, you know, listen to rap 24/7, maybe that's just me. you know what that's like. But anyway, but then I feel like there's this weird, like, kind of a weird counterpart of maybe just crickets even in the church of, like, if we're supposed to be getting a great message on sexuality and treating, because I can say as a female counterpart to having, like, friendships with guys in the church, it's weird. Like, we either become one of the guys or there's super awkward, like, side hugs and we don't, like, guys don't know what to do. They don't want to overstep bounds. And so they kind of do nothing. What isn't being said appropriately within the church that we need to do differently in the church? And maybe the guys in our audience need to start.
I think that's maybe my next book, Side Hugs and Awkwardness. recapturing.
It would be huge.
Male-female friendships and relationships in the church. There that could go. Be a bestseller. I'm going to get to work on that right now. I do think, tragically, the church as a whole, and I say this as a guy that I was a full-time pastor for many years, and now, you know, I still consider myself a pastor. It's just in a kind of a non-traditional sense doing the marriage ministry we do. We've got to do better about leading in these conversations. There has been crickets, like you said, mm-hmm. and that's tragic. And to the point where when we'll go into a church, my wife and I, and we'll talk about sex very openly. Sometimes we'll be almost accosted by people in the church, like, I can't believe you would talk about that in church. And I'm like, where in the world are we supposed to talk about it? mm-hmm. Like, seriously, like, if we can't have these conversations about sex in the church as followers of Jesus, then in that void, we're only going to be filled with the wrong message. Mm-hmm. And so the Bible has so much to say about these things because these are conversations that we're supposed to have. And we do have to do a better job about navigating what relationships should look like. You know, dating relationships, marriage relationships, friendships, both with the same sex and the opposite sex, you know, for what does it look like to be single? What does it look like to be married? If the church isn't providing, you know, relevant conversation on these issues, then we're not doing our job. And if you're listening to this and you work at a church in any capacity and you're not doing those things, then just let me challenge you, please, please focus in on teaching about relationships. It's the most important part of life. And if we're not being relevant with relationships in our teaching, we're not being relevant, period. We've got to do better.
Yeah. Because it almost seems like the pervasive, idea out there is that, well, you know, we want these guys to, you know, have sexual integrity. We want them to, you know, we want to hold up this standard of purity and stuff. So the best way to do that is just not talk about it, because then if we talk about it, then they're going to be thinking about it and then they're just going to, like, go off the rails. I don't know.
But what happens is...
Then we blame you, Dave.
A lot of it probably is my fault. I think that in the void of not talking about it, then people compartmentalize this part of their life. And I think that's led to the pornography epidemic mm-hmm. of right now, 18 to 30-year-old men, 80%, the last stat I saw, and I kind of follow these stats in our work, 80% of men age 18 to 30 view pornography at least once a month. That's 4 out of 5 guys, and largely the age demographic that's probably listening right now. And for the first part of my 20s, I was part of that statistic. Like, I had a real issue with pornography that was wrecking the way that I saw love and relationships and sex and all that. But no one was talking about it. I didn't know where to talk about it in a safe place. The church certainly wasn't talking about it. And so now, like, part of the work I do, and Ashley and I do collectively, you know, with our Naked Marriage podcast and our events is to talk a lot about porn and encourage people in specific ways to get accountability, to get help, to build a life where there's not any space for that, because that will ruin, you know, every one of your relationships. And where it leads, if we don't talk about it, the digital stimulus isn't enough after a while, and then people go off the rails making terrible sexual decisions. I mean, in Texas, where I live, they've just opened up a sex robot brothel. This was on the 5 o'clock news that my kids were watching, that sex robot brothels are becoming a thing because it's the natural progression of where that sin leads when you commodify sex and you look at the opposite sex just as an object for your own fulfillment and you don't talk about any of this in a healthy way. the next thing you know, you're a John ending up paying to rent a robot. And that seems maybe so far off base for, you know, where you are right now. But if you're dabbling in porn, it can lead there. I mean, it can lead down to some really, really dark roads. And so we've got to be honest. I think one of the hallmarks of any healthy relationship when you look at scripture is there's authenticity, there's honesty, there's friends telling each other the truth. I wrote a book called The Seven Laws of Love that kind of talks about everything the Bible has to say about love and relationships. And when you look at all that collectively, what does it mean to love our friends? What does it mean to be in healthy relationships? There's so much honesty involved. There's so much authenticity and self-sacrifice. And we've kind of forgotten how to do that as a culture, because I think we look at relationships in terms of just what can this person do for me? And it's basically a networking relationship, a transactional relationship instead of a meaningful friendship. And we've got to get back to having authentic, selfless, loving relationships again.
Yeah. And that's actually, I was going to have you go there a little more specifically, because I think that, you know, a lot of times we bandy about the idea of accountability. And this is like women, not just men. I mean, women have all kinds of things we need to be accountable for, and we're not. We're just enabling and all kinds of stuff. But like with guys specifically, for, you know, accountability when it comes to sexuality, how do you actually go there and get that? I mean, one of the things that guys tell us over and over again here at the show is just, Lisa, I'm trying to get some friends. I'm trying to get some genuine guys in my life who want to do this as well, but I feel like I'm the only one out there. Or they're in a group and all they do is just talk about how they are watching porn, but no one's really doing anything about it. So they're being honest,
right?
But they're just not moving down the track of right. Like where they need to be.
Honesty is the first good step, but for real accountability, there has to be the honesty plus action. And yeah. If either of those is missing, then you know we're kind of missing the point. It's like you can put gas in your car, but if you never drive it, then it doesn't matter if the tank's empty or not. You have to have fuel, but you also have to go. So I think that you as a guy listening to this who want that, you have to lead the way in what that looks like in your relationships. You can't sit back and wait passively for someone else to provide the kind of accountability that you want. That you got to pray for it. You've got to seek it out. And you got to find, you know, one or two trusted guys who love Jesus, who care about you. And they're not perfect, but you know what? Neither are you. And you guys together are trying to want the same things out of life. And then you've got to tell those guys, listen, I believe all of us do, iron sharpens iron, but I really need accountability in my life. And this is what that looks like. I want a safe place where I can say, listen, man, I'm struggling with this today. This is what's happened in my head. This is, you know, these are some choices I made recently. And I need this to be a safe place for me to not only confess that, but for you to call me out when I need to be called out, encourage me when I need to be encouraged, pray for me when I need to be prayed for, but not allow me or enable me to continue down, you know, these same broken and destructive paths that we hold ourselves to a higher standard. And we've got to start holding ourselves to a higher standard before we can expect, you know, others around us to hold us and each other to a higher standard. But you got to go first. You can't be passive and wait for this stuff to happen on its own. You know, you don't find biblical community. I've heard a pastor say you have to forge biblical community. Mm-hmm. It doesn't just happen on autopilot. We've got to fight for it. It's not comfortable. It's messy sometimes, but it's worth it.
Yeah. And I like that you shared, you know, you alluded to some of your own story. So you're not just like Pastor Dave and no. All he did was everything good.
I've never been tempted.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So that is great. And I would like for you to talk a little bit about you mentioned in the book how so many things are rooted for men out of deep-seated insecurity. Talk to us what for the guy that's like, what? You know, I don't know about that. Or else the guy who's like, absolutely, but I can't talk about it because I'm too insecure. Tell us a little bit about what that means and how that plays into some of the behaviors you're talking about.
Yeah. I mean, I think all of us carry some invisible wounds and insecurities that can play into how we treat one another later on in life. And for men in particular, you know, we're waiting for somebody to tell us, like, am I a man yet, first and foremost? Because what does that even mean? In the book, I talk about kind of God's plan for manhood and how we don't have rites of passage that celebrate that anymore. So you've got 30-year-old guys that are still thinking, like, am I a man now? What am I supposed to do to be a man? And maybe you didn't have anybody affirming you as you were growing up. So there's that wound, whether it's a dad wound or a wound of feeling like you were, you know, a failure in things that you tried earlier in life, and those failures mark you somehow, and that you're identified by them, or that you've been passed over for things, and you just think, do I even matter? Like who am I if other than just this failure that life tends to tell me that I am? And we've got to come back to identifying ourselves, not in the superficial ways that the world identifies people, which is just based on such temporary stuff. But you've got to identify yourself in what Jesus says about you, that you are beloved, that you are a son adopted into God's family, perfectly, fearfully, and wonderfully made, and that he has got a great plan for your life, and that you need to start behaving that way. You need to not act from this posture of fear and insecurity, even when you're feeling insecure, but you need to start walking in your identity as a son of the King who has a God-given destiny on his life. And that might sometimes mean that it's countercultural and that you seem weird to your friends, but it's better to look weird than to get, you know, pulled into just a dead-end way of doing things. And it's not about acting like you're better than other people in any way. It's, you know, it's about serving other people and not settling for less than what God has called you to do with your life, taking those risks he's called you to take. And whatever that is, you know, stop making excuses and stop hitting the snooze button on things that you know are in your heart to do. And you've got to just do them sometimes. But if you're only waiting passively for stuff to come your way, then you're going to spend most of your life just waiting. And God's called us to take action. And so don't let your insecurities hold us back. That's what the enemy wants. He wants you to just feel defeated and discouraged and to believe the lies that you don't matter or that you're defined by your failures or the lies people have spoken over you. You've got to reclaim your identity and what the Bible says about you and then live that out. And it'll change the way you live. And then eventually it'll also change the way you see yourself.
Yeah. So give us to that point, because, you know, some guys are like, okay, clearly I see where this is. And I like your point about, you know, reaffirming adoption, because again, that's a position that cannot be jeopardized. I mean, once you're adopted, you know, you're adopted. So it's like you can act out of a position of confidence, and you can risk, you know, which so many guys want to do but are fearful to do. So that's great. Give our guys a few like real life on the street scenarios of what it looks like ways that men today, like beginning tomorrow, can step up to the plate in everyday life. Like what, you know, so maybe they do have, maybe they're just straight up like, yeah, porn, sexual sin, I've got some big stuff to deal with. But some of them just feel kind of lame, like what you
right,
were saying.
Right.
Like they're just lame. They feel I'm like just, they're faded into the background. They're not really, you know, what does it look like to define themselves with this idea of, you know, they want to respect women. They want to step up to the plate. They want to be a man. Paint a picture of a few scenarios, what that could look like.
I would say before you start looking at changing everything about your circumstances, like, well, I need a new job and I need to move to a new place and I need to do, and maybe eventually that's where God will lead you.
I need to be a pastor.
Yeah, I need this massive radical life shift, and maybe eventually you'll get there. But I think the best way you can start living this out is to look at everything that is currently in your life and look at it and say, how could I do everything in my life right now better? I've got a job that feels like a dead-end job. What would it look like for me to go and actually care? What would it look like for me to be the first one there, to work hard, to be respectful, to be an encourager and a light and a motivator to the people around me, to be a mentor to, you know, newer guys who are coming in, to seek out mentorship from guys who are older than me and further ahead? What would that look like if I actively took on that role at work? In my health, you know, what would it look like if I really started to care? Like if I stopped, you know, living on Cheetos and Pepsi and I started saying, you know what, I want to get serious about being at my best. And that's part of that is being at my best physically. It's not a superficial thing of me just, you know, wanting to look amazing with my shirt off, which I never have, by the way.
But we're not going to argue.
Yeah,
but I mean,
though, yeah, if you do get abs in the process, that's not a bad thing, right? So you're going to get my age and you're just going to have love handles no matter what. And so, you know, while you're a little bit younger, you work at it. So get up a little earlier.
Of course.
Prayerfully.
No, yeah,
right.
Totally.
Get up a little earlier. You know, have some time with God every day. Start your day. You know, change your routine. Like, I'm going to spend the first 15 minutes. I'm going to read God's word, and specifically read Proverbs. It is written to young men. Read it every day. One chapter a day, 31 chapters. You can read the whole book once a month, every month, in addition to whatever else you're reading. Doing that simple discipline has helped change my thinking more than probably anything else I've done as it relates to what life is and relationships are supposed to be. Get healthy and, you know, physically, do your best at work. But again, instead of most of us think, well, my life isn't going to change until like I move to a mountaintop in Tibet and start like leading wilderness expeditions. You think of some like random crazy thing that's so opposite of your life. And if you really want to change your life, you got to start with right where you are. And it's not about changing your circumstances first. It's about changing your perspective first and actually being at your best right where you are. If Jesus came into your life and your job and your apartment and, you know, your relationship tomorrow and started living it out, how would it look different than how you're living it out right now? And then just try to make those little adjustments in accordance to that.
Yeah, that makes so much sense. And it's almost like as you were saying that, I was like just guys going through every aspect of their life and saying, is this leading me towards godliness as a man of God or away from it? Or, you know, kind of that either or. I think that's great. Okay. Quickly, as we finish out here, Me Too, the Me Too movement. Clearly, guys have had to deal with the fallout of this. Clearly, guys who are not culpable for stuff have been blamed for stuff. Clearly, there have been egregious things that have gone on publicly and not publicly. We've seen it in the news and beyond. But you actually tell the story in your book about a guy that you worked with on staff at a church arrested for statutory rape. I mean, it happens in churches.
It does, you know? Sadly, yes.
So tell us a little bit about that, because it's, I mean, I think some of the guys could just be like, well, where's the hope? I mean, again, who can you trust? What does this look like? How, you know, I mean, how should they deal with when they're, you know, with a coworker or something and they're just constantly living in fear of like, is this going to be me? Is the other shoe going to drop? Am I going to, I'm confident where I am now, but am I going to fail? What's your hope for them?
My hope for them is that, guys, listen, we are not called to live in fear. God has not given us a spirit of fear or timidity. And if we're walking in fear, if we're ever tiptoeing through life, then we're not walking in the freedom that God has for us. And we live in a broken world that is always going to have broken things happening in it. And part of our job as sons and daughters of God is to, in the midst of that brokenness, to be ambassadors for what the good can look like, you know, to be part of the healing process. And if we're unjustly, you know, blamed collectively for what, you know, men have done or women have done for that matter, then Jesus was unjustly blamed for stuff. And he kept going. He wasn't distracted from his mission to love people and to do what he was called to do. And so don't be distracted in your mission either. Continue to love the people around you. Continue to grow. Maybe watch a little bit less of the news. I think we need to know what's going on. But I think sometimes the news is just, it's produced in a way to get people like angry and on edge all the time. And if it's all you're consuming, maybe you need to take a step back from that and, you know, just watch a sitcom and read the Bible instead. And you might change a little bit of your perspective, but don't live in fear. But at the same time, be sensitive to the fact that there are a lot of people who have some deep wounds that you did nothing to cause. And sometimes they'll lash out at you, whether it's over, you know, an issue of sex like it is in Me Too or some other issue completely. And just be sensitive to know that everybody is carrying some kind of wound. And we don't have to take offense when those people unjustly bristle up against us because of their wound. But what we can do is respond with grace every chance we get. And in that way, we'll be part of the solution.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate that practical advice and just the encouragement and the hope in that as well, Dave. Okay, folks, the book is Raising Boys Who Respect Girls, Upending Locker Room Mentality, Blind Spots, and Unintended Sexism. Again, we've been talking to Dave Willis, so we'll have all the necessary links and what you need to know about him, and we'll go from there. Thanks so much, Dave.
Thanks, Lisa.